Today is the 18th of July 2017. I'm interviewing Neil and Judith Craigie. Neil is a retired company manager and Judith has been in school administration. They're going to tell me about their family and the delightful area they live in, Waipatakī. Thank you, Neil. Would you like to start off?
Yeah, hi, I'm Neil Craigie. I was born in 1947. And lived in Hastings all my school life. Went to Rarika School and then Hastings Boys High School and Hastings Intermediate. And then when I left school, I worked for Arataki Apries for a number of years. Because my dad had been a beekeeper and we'd had bees out here at Waipatakī, I'd always had a fascination for bees and have still got hives of my own. So after Arataki, I did a short period of time down the South Island managing a beekeeping operation down there until we got wiped out with American foul brood and I came back to Hawke's Bay. It was at that point I went into the agricultural industry in the weed spraying side of it with Len Smith Limited. I did 5 years with Smitty and learnt the ins and outs of the stock and station industry, the ins and outs of all sorts of things in the farming community in Hawke's Bay with a combination of weed spraying and sheep dipping. Got to know most of the farmers from an area of Porongahau right through to Pootree and right through to the ranges, including all the lands and survey blocks. So after I left Lens with chemical poisoning, which was not surprising in those days because we didn't read labels, we just bathed in stuff and rolled smokes with all sorts of horrible stuff all over them, I was forced to leave the job. Mr. Smith, in his wisdom or otherwise, wanted me to stay for the rest of the season, and the doctor told me if I don't leave, I die. So I went then with a company called Farmers Industries Limited. They were attached to what was in those days Hawke's Bay Trading Society, which were the absolute black sheep of the stock and station industry. Nobody wanted to know them. So I started with them, and after a period of time, we became East Coast Trading Society after we started a branch in Dannevirke and latterly bought out a branch of a trading society in Masterton. So we became East Coast Trading Society, and at that point, I started working for them, not Farmers Industries, and became Ag Chem Manager. Held this position for probably 10 years, until such a stage I was shifted to Marston as Branch Manager. At 23, 24, I went to Marston as Branch Manager. I obviously had staff down there that had been there for a number of years, and this little short red-headed fella arrived from Hastings to sort out something that was running at a loss all the time. And obviously there was a fair bit of skin and hair flew all over the place. But we got it sorted out after having to attend two directors' meetings to justify my removal of staff and forfeiting rebates of directors. We got it sorted out in the Wairarapa. When they asked me to shift to Gisborne to do the same thing in Gisborne, and I'd lived in 7 houses in 11 years, I said no and stayed put. Drove a frozen foods truck around Napier for 12 months delivering pies and ice creams and really absolutely enjoyed it. Had an absolute ball. Brain in neutral, bum in gear was the best thing that could have ever happened. Halfway through this period of time, Ray Gordon from Bayer New Zealand rang me and said, "You are working for me now." And I went, "No, I am not." He said, "Yes, you are." So we had quite a stoush over the phone, and I started work for him on the 1st of January of the following year, when he took over as Divisional Manager, Veterinary Division for New Zealand. Stayed with him for too many years, got absolutely bored out of my cotton picking tree and went into business on my own, roofing. Sounds crazy, putting a roofs and fascia on houses, new and old houses, re-roofing, all sorts of things. Due to a certain company in Hastings called Access Homes that went broke, we also lost a lot of money, so I wound the business up. And from then on, I went building houses, potted around a bit. And then I had a back mishap and ended up at Mitre 10 in Taradale in the days when it was Mitre 10 owned by the Ricketts. Quite enjoyed that. But that was sort of dead end, and Keith Robinson of BayPac got hold of me, and I went and managed BayPac for the last 8 years of my working life. That was intriguing, interesting. Yes, it was a good way to retire. I retired and came out to Waipariki. We were living here at the time. We'd shifted out here in 1994 to live permanently. I came out here and spent 2.5 years with Bill Perry at the camp doing all sorts of odd jobs for Bill.
Okay, now you've missed out all the important things. Okay. Your parents, where they came from, where you grew up, where you went to school, did you play any sports, all of those things. How did you go to school, did you ride a bike? It's all little things that we don't think are that important.
Okay, well, both my parents were immigrants. My father came from Scotland in 1926. Considering Scotland after World War One, there was very little work. His father had died on a farm where he would be classed in New Zealand as a stock manager. He'd died of heart attack. The croft they live in, we have since been back and found, but that croft went with the job. So they shifted into a place called Lawrence Kirk from Durris, which was only another 10 miles down the road. And Uncle Bill and Uncle Jimmy came out to New Zealand. Uncle Bill was with the Kincardine Constabulary, which was based in Bankery, and he came out and joined the New Zealand Police. Sure. Jimmy came out and worked on Ulrig Station, and when Dad and his mother and his sister came out in 1926, Dad worked on Wanakina Station for a number of years, and Mum had a stepfather, Davy Davis, that had a farm called Riverview at Mangatahi. So that's how my dad met my mum, and then he actually ended up driving for Bothwick's, doing the bobby calf run around Hastings, Napier, Waipawa, and taking the calves to Pukekohe prior to the 31 earthquake. But he was heading with a load down to Pokawa, and he picked my mother up hitchhiking because she was teaching at Pokawa School by that stage. So, yeah, they got married in 1937 and bought a house in Pepper Street in Hastings and stayed there for the rest of their... Dad died there. Mum had moved out before she died, but only recently. So, that's where they lived. There's five in our family. There's three sisters, Jennifer, Janet and Judith. Then I came along. I had a spout on, so I sort of stuffed things up a bit because I was meant to be Josephine Roberta, but that didn't work. They had to change the name. There was 4.5 years between Jennifer and Janet, and then they got the formula right and we started popping out every 18 months. And as I say, I came along with the spout on, and then my little brother came along 18 months later, and then they worked out how to stop it. So that was a bonus. At that stage, we all went to Rarika School. We walked to school. This was 811 Pepper Street. We were next to the big green house that Percy Atkins had that's art deco all over the world. Well, that house is a big fake. He was a horse trainer and a jockey. Well, that house is a big fake because it's on 4'6" piles. It looks like it's a mansion, but it's on 4'6" piles. Us kids used to run around underneath it all the time. So we went to Rarika, and then I went on to Hastings Intermediate. The girls all actually stayed at Rarika because it went to Standard 6 and then went on to... Jennifer was first year at what was Hastings High School, and second year she was at Hastings Girls High School under Connie Miller. I only picked her name up the other day because I read something about it. Constance Miller. Janet went there, Judith went there, I went to Hastings Boys High School to eat my lunch. Actually, I hated intermediate. I think the worst thing that ever happened to me was intermediate, because we got totally disjointed at intermediate and classes where your headmates got split up, and I absolutely hated it. I went on to high school. I took a professional course because my parents said he's capable of doing professional. So I learnt 10 words of French, and I learned how to do a few crazy science things, and I ate my lunch. And I was very, very glad to leave school. That actually caused the biggest argument my parents ever had. My mother was born in Australia, and father always referred to her as the Great Australian Bite. She came to New Zealand when she was 2. They had an absolute, you would call it a love-hate relationship. They loved to hate and hated to love. Father was grossly oversexed, and so was mother. But that's another side issue. Anyway, at the end of the day, I came home one day from school and said, I'd done a school holidays out at Arataki with Percy Berry. Percy Berry had bees. My dad at that stage had sold his. He'd got to 110 hives and was due to do a spring split, they call it now, and he would have been a commercial beekeeper. But because we had 5 kids, and my mother was a school teacher and extremely conservative in some ways, she wouldn't let him do it. So he stayed where he was at the freezing works for 27 years. And Dad had said to me, if you can find a full-time job, I won't stop you. Because he knew I hated school. So I went out to Percy Berry on my push bike, had a talk to him, and he said, you can start in the morning. So I came home and I said to Dad, I have a full-time job. He said, where? I said, Aritech. He said, I thought you'd go there. He said, if I ring up Percy, because they knew each other, along with Bill Ashcroft and all the other beekeepers, George Gordon, knew all those guys. He said, if I ring Percy, he'll confirm this. I went, he says, because you've been a cunning little toad all your bloody life, and he ain't going to change. So he rang up Percy Berry, and Percy said, I told the boy to start in the morning. So I actually, the parents started arguing, but I just went and packed my bags. And I actually left home, left school, and left town in one day. I left school, James Edward Teer was the headmaster, said I was wasted, I got a big long lecture, and I just looked him in the eye and said, well, I ain't staying, mate, and I went. I left home by packing all my gear. Mother wouldn't help, she just stood there and fumed, and I thought, well, I don't know what I do from here on in, but I'm on my way. And I went and lived in Golden Springs Motor Camp at Riparoa, halfway between Rotorua and Taupo on the Waikato River. Because Aritaki was shifting bees from all through the Taranaki, Whanganui area over to there. So I started over there with adult men, and I mean adult men, not sort of teenagers or anything. And I learnt a lot, very fast, no rough edges. I came home after 14 months with a big full chiseled beard and long hair down to my shoulders. I hadn't been home and I hadn't been in touch with home. And I knocked on the door. I thought I'd better go and see the olds. I knocked on the door and the mother said to me, who the bloody hell are you? And I said, well, I'm your son. She said, well, you go around to Cliff Stark, around the corner, and get your hair cut and washed and tidied up before you set a foot inside this house. So, yeah, parents and I sort of made up to a degree. Father, by this time, had been blind for a number of years. He was difficult. He was drinking extremely heavily and was always drinking heavily. As long as I can remember, he always, if I'd done something, he'd done it. So if I'd said I'd climb Mount Everest, he'd have been there before me. You know, he just couldn't help it. And so he and I just sort of, we just didn't gel, gelled. 2 weeks before he died, he was in hospital. I went up to see him, dutiful son. I was married by this stage with a child. And I went up to see him. And then one night he said to me, that you boy? And I went, yep. He said, I want you to do something for me. I said, well, what's that? I want you to get Le Bon. I said, yeah, Le Bon Halu. I want you to get Le Bon. I said, what do you want, Le Bon? I'm changing my will. I said, well, what are you doing this for, Dad? That mother of yours and that sister of yours were sitting here cackling, waiting for me to die, so they're not getting a cracker. And I went, look, Dad, they will never accept your will and the condition. They'll do as their bloody will told. So the nurse came in and they had to give him a sedative to quiet him down. I never got Le Bon because I went up the next night. And he sort of said, you got that solicitor organised? I went, yes, Dad. I knew he was on his way out. And he let out a rattle and I sang out to Kit Van Ash's wife, I think he's croaked. And she said, Neil, cut it out. That's not fair. I said, well, he ain't breathing no more. So I sat there when he died.
Kit Van Ash's wife.
Used to Craggy Range.
Where do they fit into?
They're just people I knew from weed spraying, beekeeping.
Kit would never allow a dog in the house, and whenever he came in, Margaret had a golden lab. She used to have to shoo it outside before he
That sounds like Kit. I haven't seen him for years and years and years. So that's when Dad died. My whole family was pretty disjointed at that stage because my eldest sister had shifted back from Christchurch with her husband and two kids, and they had sort of taken over a big part of Mother's life and the batch at Waipatakī. Prior to her coming back, I had leased our batch off Mother at $1 a year, and I paid all the expenses to make sure it stayed within the family, which was always my objective. Mum knew that there was going to be grief and could see it coming, so we went to Robin Bell, Bismuth Robertshaw, and had a discussion with him, and he came up with the system of, because Mum was still 100% capable, doing it right there, and then we went into a joint ownership. I paid the legal fees and paid her $200 or something, so money transacted, and we made it into joint ownership. So we never told the rest of the family, because there was no point in telling the rest of the family. It was a private sort of a thing. Anyway, the eldest sister found out, by doing the same as I probably would have done if I'd smelled a rat, going to the Lands and Deeds office and checking on the titles, and hello, it's NRA and PW Craigie own the place. So that was sort of the stone end of that member of the family. When Mum died, which was a number of years later, she did live after Dad, she did live for quite a period of time. My younger brother, who's now deceased, he sort of basically said, "Ugh, you'll sell the bloody thing now." Well, I'm still sitting in it. I never sold it and never was going to.
Now, just going back, you were married.
Yep.
What was the name of your first wife?
Jan. She was Jan Thompson from Wellington. We had two children. One was born in Marston and one was born in Hastings Hospital. Kirsten is still living in Napier. She has two kiddies. Emma lives in Wellington and Crofton Downs, I think they call the area. She's got two kiddies. Emma was brought up by her mother. So at the end of the day, I was on my own for some time and I met Judith. I'd known Judith since she was 13 when her family bought a beach batch at Waipatakee. I was the horrible little Craigie boy down the road that really nobody wanted to know.
The Craigie boys were shockers.
You ended up looking after them.
Dad had, many years ago, had seen an article somewhere about shooting a line gun out to sea with black blasting powder. Yes. He'd been a firewood contractor during the war and used blasting powder for blowing logs and all sorts. So he had to have one of these. So he had it made at the freezing works, and they turned it out of whatever pipe they did. Well, the first one they blew to pieces because they overcharged it. They turned it inside out. So anyway, he had a decent one made. And we had that line gun. I don't know where it is now. I think somebody got rid of it. But we had that line gun for years. And New Year's Eve at Waipatakee, it was mandatory that we stoke this thing up and let it go off at midnight. Right? That was cool. There was never a problem with it. It was one hell of a bang. But my little brother decided this particular year that he would get a whole heap of little stones. So he collected little stones off the beach. And when nobody was looking, we'd packed her up, got her ready in the daylight. It was already just like the fuse. He filled her up with stones. They went a hell of a long way up in the air because they were still raining down for ages afterwards on the New Year's Eve party. Yeah. So I met Judith. We had friends staying here and I needed somebody to make a fourth hand for 500. So I went up and got her and she came down and we played 500 and we've been together ever since. So we've been together for, we've been married 27 years this year and we've probably been together close to 28 years. Went through a lot of trials and tribulations with her family until... Her dad was very sick with Hodgkinson's disease and he finally died. And her mother, who was so anti-me, it didn't matter, turned a switch. And Judith and I talked about this the other day. It was just like the switch turned. One day I was, the smallest, horriblest little red-headed, crazy kid from Waipatakee. Next thing, I was the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Dad died.
Became the greatest thing since sliced bread. And until she died,
she thought the world of him.
It was just crazy. Like, Keith was dying for a long time, so everybody was well and truly prepared. But, you know, nothing was dot the I's, cross the T's. And I sort of stepped in and dotted the I's and crossed the T's. And from that day on... So that's how Judith and I met. And as I say, we shifted out here in 94 permanently after coming out Friday night and going home Monday morning moaning like hell, like we've got to go back to bloody town again. So we spent one wet weekend, and I can still remember it, in our place, or was her place actually, in Morris Spence Avenue. And it was raining, and I said, I am sick of mowing lawns, because I was mowing two lots of lawns at Waipatakee and two lots of lawns in town, on and off. And I said, we've got to get rid of something. She said, well, you won't sell the batch, will you? I went, no. So we sold Morris Spence, and we shifted out here in 94,
sold
my house, and we shifted out here in October 94, lived next door for 6 or 8 months until we rebuilt, and the house has still got pretty much the same footprint and uses pretty much the same materials, except modern, obviously, to try and keep the thing looking like Waipatakee. And my Waipatakee thing is to keep Waipatakee looking like Waipatakee.
Well, inside it's like a modern home, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. But outside, if you walk around outside, you wouldn't... Yeah.
So there was obviously lots of other things you did as well. Did you do some building at all in your life?
Yes, you did have a stunt in between jobs.
Yeah, between jobs, I worked for 12 months with Alan McLean, who's a builder in Napier. And we did John Matthews' house up on Selwyn Road. Well, John Matthews' house was one of those houses that nobody else would touch. You couldn't price it, you couldn't quote it, we did it on charge up. because for the first 4 months we dug holes down a bank. The front row of poles were 3 metres into hard, and there was about 600 of soft, and they were a metre square, and we dug them by hand because we couldn't get a digger down there. We ended up employing the Napier Boys High School first 15 on the weekends to dig the last ones that weren't so big and weren't so hard to do. Mac was on that house for all but 2 years. I was on it for about 14 or 15 months.
So you obviously learnt some building
skills. Oh, yeah.
I had a mate,
he's Rex White's son from Taradale. White's of Taradale, old drapery shop that used to be in Taradale.
They had the next door
property. And Steve had gammy legs and that sort of thing, so he sort of... Yeah, he's had strokes since. And
he'd had a heart operation,
It was the blind leading the blind. But between us, and then with a bit of help from a few other people, we got this.
Come home or neighbours
to give us a hand. So we got it built. Can I talk about Mum just a little bit? Mum came out to New Zealand when she was 2 years old from Australia. She was born in Sydney, for what it's worth. Her father, her mother and her sister, to get on a boat to come, I think it was the old Wanganella, I think it was, from memory, to come across to New Zealand. When they got to the wharf, her dad turned on his heel and walked the other way and jumped on another ship and went to America.
It's all in that box.
He left them in the lurch. So she came to Wellington and she stayed with Auntie Margaret, and her family name was Sage. And there's a Sage's Lane in Wellington that was named after my mum's grandfather, who was a sailmaker. And that's the Sage's Lane in Wellington. And there's a girl, Sage, that's in Parliament, and I'm sure she's related. Eugenie, I think.
There's a Sage family in Havelock.
That's right, and they're related. They're cousins.
George Sage.
George and Isabel, and Robin and Nikki, and...
Who's the one that made these? He was a Sage, wasn't he?
No, he's a Stern.
That's another family.
Yeah, well, Audrey, one of Mum's cousins, married Lynn Stern, that had Ramages in Nathan.
No, that was Lynn Gherkin.
Gherkin. She married Gherkin, but she was married to a Stern before that. So, Mum came out here and she went... Her mother became the housekeeper for Davy Davis at Riverview at Mangatahi. There's a little side issue. The kauai trees that are all growing around here, the seed came from Mangatahi. When Mum was a little girl, she put them in an envelope and always kept them. And when we got this place, she wanted to plant them. Took a lot of finding out on how to grow kauai trees if they don't go through a bird. Your sandpaper and all sort of boiling water. But it was an old Maori guy that told her how to do it. So every kauai tree that's on this place, and most of them are self-sown now, came from Mangatahi originally. So Mum was at Mangatahi School then after Davy Davis went broke, probably in about 1928-29, severe droughts. Droughts that, like, don't talk to me about global warming, when the dust was wearing the fences away and they were falling over. So global warming's one thing. Maybe I call it accelerated drought conditions, all right? Like accelerated creek destruction. Yeah, that's another set of rules. Anyway, Davy Davis and her mother, Mum always wished he would never marry her, but they did get married. And they shifted into Mahora for a while, and Mum did her schooling at Napier Girls High School. There's a little story there when I had to get Kirsten into a school. She was at Van Ness College in Christchurch for the deaf. She escaped, and it wasn't a disciplined school. She had to come home. I had to get her into high school. I've never pulled name dropping before, but the headmistress said, "We can't fit her in." And I said, "Can you check something for me? My mum was ducks here in 1927. Oh, let's go and have a look." So we have a look at the board, and there it is, Phyllis Robinson. She can start tomorrow. And I've never done it before, and I've never done it since, but I was in a jam.
Pretty good reason.
So Mum went to training college after that. She taught at Mangatahi School for a while. She taught at Pokawa, and then she married my dad. My dad was a chauvinistic Scottish old bastard. He did not believe in women working. Women's place was in the home, barefoot and in the kitchen, or in the double bed. That was his limit. And impregnated as often as possible. Yes, for sure. So Mum never worked after that. And what a wasted woman. Totally and utterly wasted. Her claim to fame, she was national president of the New Zealand Housewives Union. which was one step to the left of Genghis Khan anyway. They yes. was lefty. They were one jump ahead of Boris Yeltsin or whatever you want to have, you know? Yeah. So that was her claim to fame. But she was extremely bright. I've got a whole book of her poems. She used to write political poems all the time about things that happened internationally, things that happened. Her favourite was picking on the Hastings City Council, the Borough Council in those days. But she was just a wasted woman. Dad only had one eye from when he was 16 from an ice skating accident in Scotland. So after he left Monokina Station, he was solo killing at Tomona Freezing Works for 27 bloody years. In the same job, doing the same thing day after day. Except he was a pretty astute sort of a guy, my dad. He always told me when I was a young fella, never own a car. You can't hide a car, but you can hide a pushbike. It wasn't until I was shouting a few of his mates a few beers in the Stortford Lodge after he died that I found out that he never worked Mondays all through the winter. But he went to work every morning at 7. He came home at 5:30. Okay. And then when I used to play soccer, and I was playing soccer for Hawke's Bay, I got up to the Hawke's Bay under-18s, and I played right through my primary school years and that. I found out that I had a half-brother. He had the same colour hair as me, and we're in the same soccer team. So that's been a skeleton that's rattled around in the cupboard a few times.
So that took care of Mondays.
That took care of Mondays, and they did do a lot of short days. They'd finish at 2. Yes. But he always got home at 5:30 and leant against the fridge with his bottle of beer while Mum cooked tea. Okay, that was their life. They did that sort of thing in those days. Dad, when we first got this place, can I touch on here a wee bit? Because it intertwines the whole history. When we first came out here, we came out in a 1928 Buick with wooden spoke wheels. Three sisters in the back seat and me sitting in between them in the back seat. Little brother, he sat in the front seat with Mum and Dad, but he did those sort of things in those days. The seats, I can still remember the seats. You got barnacles on your bum sitting on there, little prickles in the upholstery. They're horrible bloody things. We left Hastings and we came out. I thought we were never, ever, ever, ever going to get here. It seemed to take all day to get here. The road was pure shingle, two tracks, no passing. You tooted going around corners. You backed up if you saw someone. And it was like that for a long, long time. So Dad had already been out here and talked to Alistair Bain, who was the local cocky. And he brought us round here. We couldn't get up to where our house is. We had to park down the front and walk up. And he said, well, I bought this. But they hadn't bought it. They'd leased them. They were 21-year leases with right of renewal. So he was quite happy with that. And we paid Bain a lease. So that was late 1949, early 1950. Roundabout. I couldn't be sure on the date. But I know we stayed in this house in the May school holidays 1951. And there was a little wooden shed down the back. There's photos in there. Of that, where Dad slept, he got bitten by a catapult spider and was sort of half as though he'd had a stroke for a long time. He came right. He basically built it. Yeah, right. Since I've rebuilt it, I'll say he basically built it. The foundation is still the same foundation on the main floor, and he did a reasonable job of that. Yeah, well, we won't get into too much detail, but we first stayed here in May school holidays 1951. Prior to that, we stayed over in a house over in the corner, which has since been demolished and a new big flash to go one built. We stayed in Gladys Graham's batch, and Dad worked because he didn't work a lot during the winter. It actually stopped him using his push bike a lot once he got Waipariki. He wasn't using it as much. So we came out here every school holidays. At Christmas time, we would arrive here 2 or 3 days before Christmas. Dad would stay over the statutory holidays and go back to work in town at the Freezing Works. Mm. And we used to stay here for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, what it was, the school holidays. No hats. Well, if we had hats, we never wore them. T-shirt, what was that? Pair of shorts, bare feet, and we ran. We had one stipulation. We had to come home when the old man whistled for tea. The rest of it, you got your own breakfast, you got your own lunch. If you were hungry, you ate. It was in the fridge. If Dad was working, us boys used to have to bring home parlours and crayfish for him to have when he came home. Outside of that, you did whatever you liked. Going back to school was treacherous. It was horrible. Shoes didn't fit. Sitting in clothes. Skin would start cracking and peeling. Oh, it was revolting. Why I hated school, you can see why. And why I've still got this place, I think you can see why. Because we just lived here. And when Judith and I decided to shift out here, my whole life changed. And we've been involved in the community. still involved in the community for better or worse. We've seen a lot come, we've seen a lot go. There are still four original owners or families of owners in the valley. This is in the old part. And in 1958, this sort of covers my old man's pig-headed Scotch part of it. 1958, an act went through Parliament that any lease over 14 years had to have the right of purchase in it. So Father went to Bain and said, hey, ours is 21-year lease, I want to buy. I want to buy, because he was getting lease, and he was charging us rates as well, which the old man never paid, and I can show you all the documentation.
Boxes of it.
So finally Father took Bain to court locally. Didn't work. The court wouldn't accept it here, so it went to the Supreme Court in Wellington. A gentleman, Hurley, was the Queen's Counsel. He was the guy that acted for Dad. Cost thousands. And Dad won. Not content with that, the pig-headed old twat, he decided he wanted it 1950 prices. This was in 1966-67. So he took him back to court. And he won.
He went the
McIntyre, the whole nine yards. And he won. So everybody else bought their section for the same price as Father got his. $400 they paid for the section. One particular guy out here went behind Dad's back and offered Bain $1,500, which would have set a precedent. And he all but did it. The court findings came out the day before he was due to pay Bain.
The Bain you mentioned, he related to the chap at the port?
No. All the Bains in New Zealand are related, apparently, but yes, no.
Donald Bain, who was a champion piper from Ashburton, was a cousin, and there's a Alistair Bain, who's a teacher at Tarradale High School, is a cousin.
Anyway, the old man got it for $400. He probably spent, I don't know, I've never found the accounts, I've never added up. Three other people here backed him, which was Steve Plumley, that used to own the one in front, Rosie Dunn, that the son has still got next door, and an old guy, Bill Horn, down the road here. Bill Horn's long gone and the place is long sold. They did actually chip some dollars in to help him. My father was on a blind pension. He was working at Curly Top on the bottle wash. And the pension he had, he could earn whatever he liked. But that was only sort of 3 days a week or two. So he did all this on diddly squat. Mum used to bring him out here and he'd just sit outside and drink all the time. But that's aside.
We were here by this time.
Well, they came in
59. We didn't actually know them. You know, we were right up that drive. We knew Guy Coles, who was straight in front of us, and Jim Brownlee, who was there. And we didn't really have anything much to do with further down. We were latecomers, you know.
The 59, they were latecomers. Well, Graham Wall bought that in 1968. I know that in 1968 because there's a water easement goes through our place to that house there and that there. And Dad granted Steve Plumley the easement. And I said to him, what'd you do that for? I was old enough at this stage. I was working for East Coast Trading Society. What'd you do that for? Steve will sell. He said, nah, Steve will never sell. The day after the court went through and he bought the section, it went on the market and Graham Wall and his brother bought it.
Yeah,
he died, didn't he?
Yes.
So that sort of, I've always been a little bit tenacious about people, and you could read what people do, and I always maintain people only do things if there's something going to work.
So the Tremaines were later.
Oh, hell of a lot later. Yeah. Hell of a lot later. The Hollands were a lot later. They were way over the far side.
They bought one of the new sections down the front.
Yes. When they came to do the legalisation of the subdivision, and Alistair Bain had to tar seal the roads around the village, which was to his, he hated my old man's guts. When they came to legalise it, there was meant to be 26 properties in the original block. They found an extra one, 27. What happened was Gladdy Graham had a mate, Archie Clark, in Napier. Gladdy Graham, who used to own the Tatapuri pub, ended up at Victor Paints in Napier. We always had the same. Victor Paints, fresh and bright, made in Napier, looks like shite. That was Gladdy Graham, and his mate Archie Clark worked there. So he said to Archie, so why don't you just put your tent over there? Well, the tent grew into a house. And then when they came, they went, oh, this ain't working. We haven't got room. So they had to resurvey the place. So quite a few of us lost a bit of land to fit it all. You know. Nobody ever shifted any fences, but I'm not going to tell anybody where the boundaries are. It'd be just a total shambles.
So you've seen a lot of changes here in Waipatakee.
Oh, yes. I've tried over the years to keep a list of who built, and yes. who has, you know,
pretty much got that.
So we've got a list of all those.
Tremaine did the subdivision yeah. down the front, which That's has right. always been a bone of contention yes. with a lot of us originals. Mm. It did do one thing for us. It put a sewerage system in place, mm. but because they had a sewerage system, they could take the size of their sections down the front from 780 yes, squares yeah, down to 500, which has created... They haven't seen it yet. They're not all built on yet. Wait mm. till they're all built on. They've got nowhere to park cars. Mm. It's just a shambles no, no, down yeah, there. No. Nowhere for the kids to play. It's just mm. the stupidity. Everybody's like, oh, you don't need any big sections when you live in, you know, go to a holiday home. No, you don't, but you've got to have somewhere to put your car and all your friends that come out. Right. So Tremaine's name at Waipatakī, well...
Did a bit of a dive for a while.
They did a yes. dive for a long time. Yeah. I am still not anti, because I used Mark Tremaine to do a water situation mm. for me the other day. But I still do not mm. respect Tremaine's for how they mm. operate. If it wasn't for Kel playing rugby...
Kel was always nice.
Oh, yeah, no, we always got on. Yeah. He wanted to buy this place.
He used to stay in it.
He offered me $42,000 for it, I don't know how many years ago.
Bought one down in the Huckberries.
No, he had that before. It's after he sold that one. Before he bought Jack yes, Agnew's, he wanted to buy this one.
Huck mm. bought it off him. You'd know Huckberry, wouldn't you, from school?
No.
He was Philip Berry.
Yes, I knew him as Philip. I didn't
know his name. Well, we know him as Huck and Helen. So, I've seen a lot of people come, and as I said before, a lot of people go. And there's some really, really nice people out here. The Hudsons over in the corner from Graver Station. You know, we have a lot to do with Carola and Mike.
Carola's just such a hard case. She's lovely.
But Mike is now 85, 86 and starting to show it.
Still pretty sharp.
He's still sharp, but the body's not so good. Carola, well, she's 82 or 83.
Would he be a grandson of the original owner?
His mother was a Carlion.
So he's the son of the previous owner's wife.
And now Phillida and her husband have got the big house, the Gibsons.
So, as I say, there's been a hell of a lot of nice people. In the original subdivision, when they were originally building, it was the hugest cooperative you could ever get. Mm. If somebody was pouring concrete, there were 10 people there, right? There's a lot of booze, but there was 10 people.
Just food.
Well, it was a social occasion, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
When that house was built on the corner, Jimmy West built it for Doc Lucas, that used to be in Taradale. The one on the corner, Hudson. He had a concrete mixer with a motor on it. Not one of these ones that somebody cranked. So he had a concrete mixer. Jeez, and it mixed some concrete on the weekends. Every weekend there'd be somebody already planned paths, house foundations, whatever, all cleaned up and put back there for Monday morning when he came back up.
It's always a bit of a laugh, but I've got a concrete mixer and it does the same thing now. Who had it last time? Oh yeah, we'll go and get it from there and you can have a lead of it.
You know, a power pool and a chap who we knew. But see, concrete mixers were like that.
Somebody borrowed it and said, oh, can we pay you the hireage for it? I said, what do you mean we don't hire it? But it's got Winstones on it. I said, yeah, no.
It was Winston Crandy's hire concrete mixer.
Yeah, Winstones sold it to my first husband. He bought it off Winston's because he used to do a bit of
We put wheels on it now so it can be towed by a quad bike around the place. So it's known as Waipatakī Ready Mix when it goes past.
Right, Judith, coming back to you then, your family.
My family. Well, my family also originates in Scotland. My grandmother on my mother's side came from Dundee, and my grandfather on my father's side came from Aberdeen, where Neil's family was in Durris. It's halfway between the two. So there was sort of a strange little thing that happened.
And her grandparents worked in the jute mills as weavers and weavers, and the Craigies owned them.
But however, Granny and Grandad, Mum's grandparents, went to the South Island. They went to Awaka. Do you know where Awaka is?
I can't tell you exactly where it was.
Little funny little place. It's near Balclutha, in the Catlins. Yeah. And they went to work in the dairy factory there, Granny and Grandad. And Nana was born in Scotland. Mm. She came out with them. She was only a toddler. And there was also a family of Kerrs in Awaka. Yeah, I'm still going through their stuff to get all that organised. Anyway, Nana and Pop Kerr, he's Richard Kerr, he was a sawmiller, and the Kerrs had a place at Ahuru Flat. They had a farm, and I think there were seven brothers. I'm very hazy on that side of the family, but they were all from down in that South Otago area. And anyway, Pop Kerr came up, he became sort of more involved in the mechanical side of the sawmilling down there, beautiful native bush all through there. I mean, Granny and Granddad, I knew my great-grandparents, and they were really little Scots people. They were gorgeous. But Pup came up to Hawke's Bay, and he managed the machinery for the Old West Shore Bridge, the one with, you know, the bend in the middle, because he got involved with the traction engines. He used to deal with traction engines and all that sort of thing. And he had a business in Napier Kerr Engineering, and his son took it over, Jim Kerr. He may have been at school with you. He was a friend of Alan Goss, who was the minister. No, he would have been older than you. Anyway, he had that till he died, and Jim took it over. So that's how Mum came to be up here. She went to Tech, and she left in 1930. So that was her last year. So, of course, she was in all that earthquake stuff. She trained as a hairdresser, actually, and she used to work in the same building as Huckberry's father. He was a men's hairdresser. They had the business behind it. And she'd also worked at the tobacco factory at the port, because they lived in Port and Campbell Street. And everybody who lived over there at some stage worked in the tobacco factory, knew the Hushiers, and it was with the old man Hushier. Dad's family, his father came out from Scotland, and there's all sorts of skeletal bits and pieces. I found, I'm great at digging around on Google, and I found where his father had been bankrupt. I'm really not sure why, but it was the dissolution of the bankruptcy. At any rate, I found a notice for that. And they were Maunganui. And just as a side thing, I've been doing all of the boys' high school First World War soldiers, looking them up, getting the records. So I thought, oh, look up. I don't think any of our family went to World War One. No, two cousins from Maunganui went. One was killed, and the other one became a doctor in Maunganui, who was quite well known. And also several of Pop Kerr's brothers went to World War One. Just never knew. So that made me feel a bit better. I felt we were part of it then. Yes, so Dad's father was a shopfront builder. Remember Blythes and Napier, where you used to walk around the back, all that sort of stuff.
The
and
false fronts
on them. And he did a lot of, I had an order book of his, which I gave to the museum, and it was orders on Blythes to make cabinets for inside the shop and, you know, building things. And he built a house in Kennedy Road, which got shifted when the service station went in on the corner, and it's still in Latham Street. So it's still there. I've been in it. It had a for sale sign outside it one day. I said to Mum, this is a long time ago, Mum, we're going in to have a look. Told them why. And they were most intrigued as why and where and all of that. Yes, he built there, but he died before the earthquake, I think. He had cancer, And Nana and Dad lived there. Nana died in 1959, and I was in the middle of sitting school cert, so I knew that. And anyway, the war years, and Dad went into the Air Force, and he was shifted around New Zealand. He was at Hobsonville, and he was with the early party that went to Rookahere in Hamilton, and they set up, he was a mechanic, an aircraft mechanic. He was an automotive electrician. He worked for Bissell's in Napier. He was a partner in Bissell's with Jim Bissell, and he was working on the aircraft, and he set up the hangars and things there with an advance party. In 1940, Mum and Dad got married, and Mum followed him all around New Zealand. He was in Wellington for a time in Christchurch and Hobsonville. In fact, I've got a letter there from Mrs. Bolt, whose husband was the commander at Hobsonville at one stage. And, you know, a really nice personal letter that I've just found. So I'm going through that side of the family at the moment. Yes, they were married in 1940, and I was in 1944. Dad never forgave me because I couldn't remember living on the Air Force Station. We were in a cottage next to it, on a farm cottage. And he said, but you must have remembered all the, because they ran all the motors up, they went all day and night. You must remember that. No, I can't remember that.
Just noise.
Yes. So we came back to Napier after the war. I was just a little tot, and we sort of shifted between Mum's family and Dad's family, and it doesn't work. But there were no houses. Mm. There were no sections. You couldn't buy houses. No. Couldn't build.
It's not new.
So we went into Kennedy Park motor camp and the transit camp there. In fact, our transit camp, we were in the other end from Newton Angove. He was a bit of a, I think he ended up on the city council.
He used to write letters to the paper.
Yes.
I remember his name.
There were all sorts. So we went into Rutherford Road, and as a house came up, a family went out of transit, and we all ended up in the same road. So we'd all been at transit camp. And some real hairy people. It was amazing. And so Dad was one of those people, you know, as soon as you could buy them, he bought it and he extended the house out, and it's still probably one of the biggest houses down Rutherford Road. Just an aside, next door to us, after a number of years, there was a Smith family lived in, and behind them over the back fence were Larsons. Now, Trevor Smith ended up CEO of Rothmans, probably one of the highest paid. And the one over the back fence was Warren Larson, who is the dairy board, and also one of the highest people, both state houses. So it was a real mixture of people.
So you went to school from there?
I went to school at Mariwa School, which was quite new. It's got its 75th.
75th, I think.
Yes, no, the boys' high school is 150th coming up. So I went to Mariwa School, right through Mariwa School. We had people who were ex-war, you know. We had an Air Force, Mr. Finch had been ex-RAF, and we had Bob Holmes had been in the army. So then I went to Napier Intermediate, and from Napier Intermediate I went to Girls High School. So I was there just for the 3 years, did a commercial course. Always had said I would have quite liked to be a school teacher, but that sort of happens later on. But during this time, my best mate along the road was in transit camp, and we went into the same road, and her dad was in the Napier pipe band, and Penny and I both learned to play the pipes. And then there was a family of Mansfields in Napier, and there's Ian as well. Ian was my first husband.
Mance
has just turned 80, so you must be
I'm 81.
Yeah, he's just in March. There were his three sisters and a group of us who'd done Highland dancing. So we formed the Napier Ladies Pipe Band. And so that sort of took over our lives a bit from high school. Yeah, so his sisters, and I was never a very sporty person.
Well, that's a sport though.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, we marched. I mean,
and Highland dancing.
And Highland dancing, yes. But even the pipe bands then, we used to do a lot of marching for competitions and things. And every Sunday morning we were in Nelson Park doing marching. So, yes, romance. As a side to that, Murray, my youngest son, has become probably one of the top pipers in the country. He played at Gallipoli for the 100th anniversary. He was in the Air Force. He joined the Air Force. I'll get to that with my boys. So anyway, I married Ian and was at Girls High School for 3 years. And the teacher we had there at the time, Mrs. Brunt, said to me, "You thought about going into a bank, Judith?" Well, funnily enough, I had. I'd been going through things. And she said, "Oh, well, I'll give you an interview for the National Bank in Napier." So I was in the National Bank in Napier for 10 years. I loved it. I loved the bank. I loved the people. Yes, I loved the customers. Yes. And I was always dealing, you know, with old Andrew Paxey. And whatever people tell you about Andrew Paxey and his glass eye, it is dead right. Because he dropped it out in his hand in front of me one day. And I thought,
well, the Paxeys were at school when I was there. Yeah. I used to go down and always have a meal at the Paxeys. Once a year I'd go down.
Yeah, that was old Andrew.
And they used the old butter papers under the fish and chips. And look, I had some lovely fish meals there. They always remembered me. I did this for probably, 15, 20 years.
Down in Hastings Street, because it was just along the road from the bank. We had all the banks on the corner. But yeah, I loved the bank. I was there for the changeover on decimal currency, and that was interesting. You'd have known Isabel McLean, would you, in Hastings?
No.
She worked in the National Bank in Hastings for years and years and years. Friend of the walls. We used to go over and we'd have ping pong nights and goodness. So I loved that, but I'd got married and I was having, and you didn't stay on once you got. So yeah, Andrew was born in 1969, and I was just talking with someone the other day. Shearers in Napier, the grocer shop, they used to come to the house and they'd take my order and they'd bring it back the next day.
Well, we had the Hawke's Bay Farmers. And Hastings used to do that too.
Well, see, Bissell's in Napier, after Jim Bissell died, the Hawke's Bay Farmers bought out. They bought out Dad, and Dad still worked for them. Oh. So he became a long-term employee of Hawke's Bay Farmers. Yes, so we've still got the watch. Neil's got the watch, I think.
I haven't stayed anywhere long enough.
He was there forever at Bissell's. Yes, so I worked in the bank, as I say, till Andrew was born, and then had Murray. And not that long after, Ian and I sort of parted company, and I had to have a job which I could have, you know, school time off. Fortunately, Mum and Dad lived close by, and the kids could go to them after school or when I needed to. But I got a job at Tamatea Intermediate School, which was just opened, and the lady who lived next door to my mother was Ron Hicks's secretary from primary school, I think he was at, and he was going to Tamatea Intermediate. So I was there for just a year. I set up the library and things, but then they chopped ours all over the place. So they said, oh, look, there's a job going up the road at Tamatea Primary School. So they sent me along there, and I stayed there for 13 years till Graham retired. Graham Cass was a... We went to see Graham earlier this year. He's got Parkinson's, and he's just a little wean. But Graham, he sort of became family, he and Nola. And then when the new principal came, and I won't say any names because he was just awful, just a disaster. From people being, you know, really happy, it all just closed, and you know, you'll teach this at this time, and you will write a report, and you'll, you know, and it didn't have to happen that way. It was his way. Right. So at this time, the boys were at Boys High School, and I had been, while I was at Onikawa School, I was on the school committee, and because I was working in the days, I wanted to do something at their school, so it was things that could do at night. So I was on the school committee, and Murray was at intermediate and Andrew was at high school, so I went and joined Parents League, and the first night I was there, they made me secretary. It was ridiculous. So for all the years they were at high school, I think it was 7 years, and I was still at Tamatea at that stage, I was secretary of Parents League. So, I mean, I knew it pretty well. So I rang up Bruce Davey and I said, Bruce, have you got any jobs here? Is there, you know, a teacher aid type thing? And he said, yes, come along. Well, he employed me as a lab assistant, which was an absolute disaster. I wasn't anything to do with science. No, I can't. There was another small job that went along with it, the part community education and part that. So I said to the science teacher, look, this isn't going to work. I said, I can't do this. Bruce should never have put me here. And he was always my best friend after that, because at least I was up front with him. So it was Tom Butte. Anyway, I sort of took over the community education, and I was there for 20 years doing education at Boys High School. So I employed all sorts of people, amazing people who did amazing things.
Still run into them after
time. Oh, yeah. Then everything got very political, and the Tertiary Education Commission took it all over. And we had to do all this jolly reporting and stuff. So then we got put onto the Euro circuit. So I had it absolutely spot on. Everything was up to date. It was all done. So I said to Ross, I said, okay, I think it's time I retire from the community education. Somebody else can take it over. It's all ready to go. It's all perfect. It's all just had an Euro. When they came in and did the report, the report said this and this needs doing, and I said to Ross, this is when the draft came in, I said, but those are the things that I've put down that will be done, those things to be done in the future, which was the way it was working. You did those next year and the following year. So they got the Euro team in and said, this is rubbish, that is already accounted for, that comes out of it. So I just got a blank, you know, and I was really pleased because I was the only one in the whole of the Lower North Island that didn't have a revisit. So I was quite chuffed about that. So, you know, I felt good. That was it. Time to move on. I was about 60 by this time. So I spent another 5 years back at the school. I dropped that out, and I'd always done two or three other little jobs in the school. So I used to go in 3 days a week and do library and things. So, yeah, and that was my boys' high school. And I'm still secretary of the Old Boys Association. Have been for 25 years. So hence this jolly reunion. And I said, I'm not doing another one after the last one, but I'm just doing the registrations.
And do you still play 500?
We haven't played cards for a long time. I suppose TV's killed cards a lot.
Yeah, and just the fact that you needed that extra hand invited Judith down.
Yeah, we shouldn't have gone walking down to the beach that day. That was just bloody stupid.
Well, we knew he was on his own, so he'd come up and had dinner with us, actually, the night before.
Yeah, things happen. And
so you really retired to here.
Yeah, we basically both.
And do your off-duty places, like your school committee.
Old boys and old girls. Yeah. I've been president of the old girls since I've been here. So I think, is it old boys or old girls this week?
Are you on
Yes, we are.
Well, it's not that fast. We're on telemetry from Napier Bluff Hill. We're on what we call Taylor Broadband. Yeah. And Ray Taylor, he set it up for us. Yeah. Three of us funded it. just a seeding fund so he could get the equipment. And there was Bluff Hill to the top of the hill over there, or halfway up the hill, and then it's around the village. Yeah.
And Ray's an old boy, and his mum still works. She's the tea lady at Boys' High School, so you have networks, you see.
So there's about, I think there's 18 houses are connected to the broadband circuit here. We're on his telephone system, which is telemetry also. So our phone works perfectly 99% of the time,
but
except if we have a power cut.
Not on a power cut.
Have a power cut, we've got nothing.
We can use cell phones on the beach.
No cell phone cut.
So the future of Waipatakī?
Future? It can't have a future in the sense that there's no more land available. All right? What you see is what you've got. May be the odd section, maybe split in half and sort of infill, but I very much doubt it because they're all 840, 870.
This is probably one of the bigger ones, isn't it?
No, it's not. But there's two big sections up the back, but they all go straight up the
hill. Our one that was up at the top there.
That was 1,248
square. It goes up a hill, so there's only a small area, and it's just...
It's got a footprint on the bottom. Yeah. Bill Perry over the creek has sold the motor camp to a consortium of the three councils, Hastings, Napier, and Regional. So whatever happens to that, that's either a camp. If it fails as a camp, which is always the possibility, it becomes a reserve. The rest of his farm runs right round the bottom of the pine trees to the top of the quarry. Sure. What Billy does with that, I don't know. He owns it all apart from one big section up the top his sister owns.
How much land does he still
have? There's still 80-odd acres, 80, 90 acres. Mm. But he could have sold it for $6 million to Andy Lowe, offered him $6 million for it, and he turned it down. In Bill's lifetime, I don't think anything will change. Mm. But then Bill's 75, 76, and his health stood. But at the end of the day, that's the only way anything can happen in this valley as far as extra houses are concerned. This side of the valley is... There's two sections as you come across the bridge. There's a piece of land in there.
Baines one.
That's what I'm talking about. Baines. Three or four sections. Mm. So I think what you see is what you got. The water supply, well, we're not going to go down that track about the water supply because it's just been a disaster because of the Hastings District Council's ineptitude. They've done to us what they did to Havelock. Sum it up a little bit like
that. We've got our own filter on it.
We've put in our own screening system, completely carbon. Just got fed up with chlorine. All I can think of is throw some chlorine and it'll fix it. It doesn't
Chlorine's
fix it.
Chlorine's the most awful thing.
It's a shocking thing. So anyway, that's at the water. We've got our own sewage system, which is a wastewater system. There's a lot of problems with that because, again, of the Hastings District Council's ineptitude. And I'm not short of saying it because I had a meeting there the other day and I told them straight to their face what I thought of them. We've got huge water intrusions getting into it in high rainfall areas. This is a high rainfall area. We've had 1,040 mils so far this year, and that's no rain in January and stuff all in February, so you can see what we suffer from.
Yes.
The future of Waipatakī is, as I say, I think what you see, what you've got. Chris Tremaine is trying to build an eco lodge up on the hill over there, but it's a defended par site, and the Maoris have stepped in, and once they're in it, well, you can forget it. He might win, but it's going to cost him two arms and seven legs for nothing, and they'll still win in the long run.
Keep him busy, won't
he? He got into the press when he first put the road up to it.
Again, going back to the whole valley is pretty much what you see, what you've got. There's some funny ideas. One guy up the top here, who's a hell of a nice guy, he would like to see the bush fence with a predator-free fence. I agree with him on that score, but who's going to pay for it? It's the old story. The council, every time you ask them something, they've never got any money. But when you see them waste that much money, you just wonder what the hell they're there for. We had what we call a creek restoration committee. I call it the creek destruction committee.
They...
And you know enough about herbicides. They blanket sprayed the banks with glyphosate.
Fell in.
And in the old days when you sprayed areas with paraquat, it just burned the grass off. You might have killed a bit more. Yeah. But pretty much... It carried on. Well, they used glyphosate, didn't they? Blanket sprayed it, and if you have a look all the way from the bridge up, which I am totally opposed to their lollipop planting, we all but lost the road, we've all but lost the bridge, and they're sitting back saying, oh, but the experts said we could do it.
And the experts didn't know anything about it. They'd just done it.
So we've had what I call rapid erosion. Glyphosate rapid erosion, I call it.
Yes.
Anybody that gets loose with glyphosate has got to
be... Been there for 50 years.
I've been here 67 or 68 years this year. I've seen Cyclone Bola. I've seen the damage, the 63 flood that took out the whole of the bottom of the valley and a couple of houses. They've done more damage with a drum of glyphosate than they ever did.
Is there anything else? Do you fish?
Yeah, I fished out of here for years in a boat until my mate across the road had a brain aneurysm and I lost my crew. In 4 hours he died. The boat went out, I think, once more after that. I just couldn't. I went out to sea with my mate, wasn't there? You know, for 20 odd years we'd gone. We'd get up at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning. We wouldn't speak. The boat would be on the trailer, the motor would be warm, we'd be gone, we're down the beach, we're out to sea. He said, oh, not a bad day, eh?
This silly clot, how long ago was it? Was over at the camp helping cut down trees. He fell out of a tree.
Jumped
out of the tree. He spent 3 weeks in an intensive care in an induced coma because he had punctured his lung. 2 years ago, he's had the last knee put in. So he's got two metal knees. Apart from that, he's also got screws in his back and wires in his chest. He's had a triple bypass. So he's not fit to go out in a boat.
Not now. But we fished and we caught fish and my dad and mum are both around there. Their ashes are both around there. Yeah. And that's where I go. The fishing now is, if somebody says they've got some power, they know they're undersized. If they say they've caught a heap of fish off the beach to kill a porky, modern thing with the motorised contickies, there's a few people have tried them out. I've tried one out. We ended up catching the floor of the Pacific Ocean two or three times and had nothing but grief. There are fish out there, but the fishing's not better. The crayfish are there. In the summer, the crayfish are taken, but always north, not south. Always north towards Ridgemount, Arapaho, and that's a breeding area. When they get on a march, I brought a net in here one morning at break of daylight. We pulled the net in and hand over hand, just bloody crayfish. You ever tried discharging a net at sea?
No.
So we brought it back here. Oh, I don't know. We gave away crayfish.
Yeah, the whole back lawn here. Back lawn was covered.
I never counted them. I don't know. 200 or 300.
We had flatfish one day. Wasn't big fish box, and they've sent the kids off. This was just sort of breakfast time. You know, everybody in the whole valley had flatties for breakfast.
You were talking about the gun you used to shoot.
Oh, the line gun, yeah.
We decided we'd use a gun. So anyway, we set her off, and it really was exhilarating in some ways because it took off, but it went at such a velocity that it left nearly every bit of bait on the beach.
Yeah, we did that.
And the thing kept going and never stopped.
We did one down there like that. The first one, the old man, Gladdy Graham. My old man had big hands, right? And the old man says to Gladdy, how much powder put in, Gladdy? His real name was Gladstone Graham. Mm. Everybody thinks he was a woman, it's Gladdy. Oh, I just give her a handful, Craigie, because they always called my dad Craigie. He was never Bob or Robert. So he poured a handful and the thing went kaboom! And the sinker went splat about 20 metres down the beach. And nothing happened, you see, because he blew the sight out of the gun completely. The next one he put in, she was all tickety-boo. The thing took off that bloody fast, it left all the line behind broke, and the last thing we saw was a splash so far out to sea it wouldn't matter. So they decided, they had a few beers, and they decided they had to modify their system. So they modified it, because we used a piece of pipe about that long with lead in it, with an eye screwed into the top, and that was the weight. So the next one went fine, did exactly what you said. Every bit of bait was on the beach, and the bloody line went way out to sea. But we got it back again. So Mother came down to the beach. She said, you guys are nuts. She said, here's a pair of nylon stockings. Put your bait on, tie all your baits on with nylon stocking, bit of nylon stocking. So they did. Oh, bloody Phil Craig, he didn't know what you're doing. Bloody stupid doing this, don't need to do that if we put them on baits on. All the mutter, 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 and 5 beers later. They got one snapper. And there's a photo on there of my dad with his one snapper. He never went fishing again after that, he caught a fish.
Yes, so anyway, I think that's probably given us a picture of the Craigies of Waipatakī.
Pretty much, I would think.
But thank you very, very much for sharing this with us. You know, a lot of people don't even know Waipatakī.
I know.
You'd be surprised how many people you meet at Napier and you say you live in Waipatakī.
Oh, I've never been out there.
Where's that? How long you lived in Napier? All my life, I've never been there. Hell of a lot. The road stopped everybody for a long, long time.
Yeah. Right? Oh, people still say, is it still that terrible road?
We're fully tar sealed.
I only ever used to come in off the top road.
Oh, okay.
That's the terrible bit.
Well, in 1950, this other road wasn't very good either.
Oh, coming up from the bottom, it was still the shortest.
Yeah, it was just the shortest. Stop road,
yeah. We always came up the bottom, very seldom went out the top road, only if there was slips and floods.
When we still had a little bit that we haven't said anything about, you've probably noticed there's a few sort of easterny bits around. Yes. We had two boys who were overseas students from Napier Boys High School lived with us on and off, not at the same time. And from that, we've been back to Thailand, you know, four or five times. Lived with Thais, not with Europeans. That one's from Vietnam. He's the Vietnamese one. They're very round, fat
heavy
ones.
And that's a green man.
Oh, he's a green man from Bath.
We have travelled quite extensively since we retired.
Yes.
We'll probably do another trip to Thailand, but...
We're getting homesick for Thailand.
Yeah, but we're getting older and it's a lot harder and the temperature changes and all the rest. And the two boys in Thailand, last time we went, we sent them an email and said, look, we don't want to do much. We're coming to see two families. We spent a week with
each.
We've got kiddies and this sort of thing. We want to spend some time with you. They can't read English, can they?
These little girls here, are they your granddaughters?
They're Murray's, the one who's the piper.
They're from Palmy. We're taking them back here this afternoon. Oh. They've been here for a while.
So where did you send them to?
We've got a sleep out down there. When we sold the top batch, part of the trade-off was to build something down there that the family could stay in. So we built a two-bedroom plus a shower apartment down there. It's just the same. They've got a heat pump down there and they've got a DVD. They've been watching the DVD.
Yeah. Murray got a QSM in the Queen's Birthday Honours last year.
For?
Piping. Involvement in piping. Yeah.
He's pretty well up there.
He was the official piper for the Defence Force, and in fact, when he retired from... He's selling real estate, for goodness sake, he and his wife.
For Harcourt's and Palmy. Doing all right. It's good times at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I worked for 24 years for Tremaine's. Yeah. And of course, we saw another side. They were the most generous family.
The boys were at school with my boys.
I'll never forget Kel saying to me, this replies to Waipariki. He sold... the one that Huckberry's got now. He says, oh, see, you're sold. Oh, you bloody stupid owning a batch at Waipariki. You're better off renting one. Saves you a lot of money. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, he looked at buying this place. He used to rent next door at Dunn's every Christmas for I don't know how many years. Anyway, bought Jack Agnew's.
Okay, well, look, on that note, I'll terminate this and just say thanks very much for sharing this with me.